On this episode of Video Culture, we'll talk the fantasy of Jim Henson with The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills, there will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acri and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to another episode of Video Culture. I'm your host, Ryan Acri.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And this week we have Jim Henson Fantasy. And we decided to do, these two movies are like both PG, right?
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, all you know, audiences, basically, parental guidance.
They're fit for children and the children in all of us.
Yes. And Jim Henson, everybody should know who Jim Henson is at this point. The Muppets. What else did he do? I mean, he was responsible for, you know, some of the
he had a hand in creating Yoda for Star Wars. His Jim Henson Workshop basically was the premier like puppet creation studio for decades.
Right.
But really their biggest thing is the Muppets. That's their biggest like achievement. But what an achievement. I mean, that's a kind of a global cultural phenomenon there, you know.
Right.
Multiple series, multiple movies, animated shows, uh-huh. Tons of merchandise, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Kermit and Miss Piggy and even some of the Sesame Street, right? Like Big Bird and
Of course. I don't know why I blanked out on Sesame Street.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, he wasn't responsible for creating like Sesame Street, right? But his company did a lot of the, Muppets
They did all the puppetry,
right? But they were, you know, they were kind of separate. Like the Muppet Show had their stuff and you know, always the sometimes when they did the Muppet movies, like I know Big Bird would show up in the Muppet movies, but like they wouldn't really have like Kermit or Miss Piggy on, you know, Sesame Street. So
well, Kermit would show up as a reporter, but that's neither here nor there.
Right. Yeah.
And then you had Fraggle Rock, which was an HBO show.
Yep.
Which people our age were always pretty obsessed with.
And then you had the Baby Fraggle cartoon show, right? That was a spinoff of Fraggle Rock.
And there was also the Muppet Babies, which was talking about animated Babies. Series.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, again, so Jim Henson has had a big hand in pop culture in that respect, and basically keeping the art of puppetry alive and interesting to generations, probably for the past, 30, 40 years of just, keeping people interested in the idea of puppets and making them come alive.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we lost Jim Henson in May of 1990. So that's where, you know, why he's not around. So if anybody, wants to know, yes, he died very young. But he created these two, these were like his two, besides just like the Muppet movies, like The Great Muppet Caper and,
Muppets Take Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know,
this was, these two movies are far departure from that. And these are like the dark side of, of Muppets. I mean, this is fantasy world. This is, you're dealing with very serious subjects like, you know, death and destruction and, you know, being lost and having something taken from you and, you know, getting hurt. And, you know, it's just a, these are not, you know, these are very sort of like deeper, scarier films, right? Like,
yeah. It's like I was telling you off air when we were doing our kind of pre-production stuff before this started. Henson always had really strange sensibilities. Like, The Muppet Show is very mainstream, but if you go back and watch some of those Muppet Show episodes, which are all available through the Disney streaming service now, there's some really weird stuff in there. And a lot of his non-Muppet work is very kind of, I don't want to say macabre, but it's definitely weird, and it's got kind of a dark edge to it. Like, I always think of it, he did a show called The Storyteller, which was basically a recreation of like, old folk tales, and it's full of like just really weird, almost nightmare imagery. Mm-hmm. And I would say both these movies have a lot of what I would call nightmare imagery in them, like kind of slightly unsettling, mm-hmm. things that aren't really, you know, what you would think of when you think of like cute Muppets. There, mm-hmm. there's some real gnarly looking things in both these movies.
Well, there was a very adult themes in, you know, Fraggle Rock, too. I mean, I remember there were episode where, cause you know, they always eat the dozers, like, you know, build like whatever that they built is like food. And, but you know, somebody said, hey, we can't eat it. These are their creations. But then they built so much that then they went on strike and then, you know, it created like a whole, you know, kind of, like, you know, what do we do, you know? And it was just like, it's really odd to see, you know, these like sort of almost irreconcilable differences as a kid. Like, you're dealing with, you know, like problem solving and stuff like that, like you know, how to deal with a bully or how to deal with, you know, I didn't get what I wanted, or how did I, you know, it's not that kind of stuff, right? It's, you know, these are some deep subjects. These are some deep socio, you know, sort of things. And yeah, The Dark Crystal and Belt of the Labyrinth are dark fantasy where you're dealing with goblins and like these other world and, you know, very mystical and, you know, very sort of like Lord of the Rings kind of type of stuff, right?
Yeah, The Dark Crystal definitely has some heavy influence from Lord of the Rings. I mean, it definitely has a real J.R.R. Tolkien quality to it. But yeah, they're but again, they remind me of like traditional story of traditional like fairy tales, like true Grimm's fairy tales type of stuff with consequences and danger and darkness and death and dismemberment. Mm-hmm. But it's such odd films because it has all this stuff in it, but it's got this, you know, kind of weird veneer because it's all are mostly puppets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to me, it always takes me a minute to get used to watching, you know, Labyrinth or The Dark Crystal, because it takes my mind a minute to adjust that I'm watching, you know, puppets move around.
Yeah.
That are doing like serious things.
Yeah.
Well, there's just a bit of dissonance for me when I watch these.
Yeah, it is a little bit strange. But even when I first saw like the main character, like, you know, talk, it's kind of like, when you watch, what was the puppet, like the, the guys from South Park did the
Team America.
Yeah, Team America. And... Yeah, it was kind of like that. Like when they first, you know, when the Gelfling, you know, guy, he first talks, you're just like, oh, this is weird. This is odd. This is one thing when like a creature talks, but I mean, he kind of looks like, even though he's a Gelfling, he, you know, it's much more human looking, right?
Yeah, except for his weird three finger hands, which really gave me the heebie jeebies.
anyway,
let's go ahead and get into it. What's the plot of The Dark Crystal? All right,
another planet, another time. 1,000 years ago, the mysterious Dark Crystal was damaged by one of the Urskeks. An age of chaos has begun. The evil race of grotesque bird-like lizards, the Skeksis, gnomish dragons who rule their fantastic planet with an iron claw. Meanwhile, orphan Jin, raised in solitude by a race of the peace-loving wizards called the Mystics, embarks on a quest to find the missing shard of the Dark Crystal, which gives the Skeksis their power and restore the balance of the universe. And that was written by Anthony Perea. I hope I'm saying your last name correctly on from IMDb. Thank you very much. And, but yeah, it's just like, you know, they have mystics. They're called mystics, right? They're these peace kind of like, you know, monks that live in, you know, in the mountains, right? And, you know, but this Gelfling, you know, human-like creature is kind of raised by him. But, I mean, you find out very early on in their conversation that, like, his parents died. You know, the Skeksis, like, killed his parents. So this is like, oh my, like, we're talking about death here. We're talking about destruction. That sort of thing.
I mean, it's got a real, like, fantasy vibe to it. You've got these peace-loving creatures. This thing called a Gelfling, which is basically an elf.
Right.
Let's call them what they are. Yeah. The Gelflings are elves.
They're puppet elves.
And you got these like, they're weird puppet. They're weird elves with creepy hands. And you got these horrible like bird creatures who are like the villains of the story.
Well, I mean they just reminded me of vultures. Basically, they really are.
They're basically vultures who have lost all their feathers, and they just kind of dress themselves in ornate robes to make up for it.
Right.
But both these races are dying out, basically. The mystics and the weird bird monsters are both on their last legs.
Right.
So the world is basically this age is coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And so this little elf dude with his weird creepy hands goes on a journey to basically find the missing piece of this crystal so he can reunite it and basically heal the damage that has been caused by the schism between these two ancient races that are dying out.
Mm-hmm.
And that presents itself in the film by a lot of slow walking. Slow walking.
I know. Because they had to make their way towards the castle or get there, or he had to do something. It was just, there was a lot of filler time between when you found out like what needed to happen. Because you find out very early on what needs to happen and then, like, where we're actually getting there, right? Yeah. So, like, the middle of the movie is just, like, a bunch of, yeah, like you said, like, it would just, like, cut between the different, you know, scenes. Like, it would cut between, like, what the Elflings were doing, what the, you know, Skeksis were doing versus, you know, what the Mystics were doing and always what the Mystics were doing, like, about put you to sleep. Because they move so slow, you're like, "Is this playing at the correct speed?"
sometimes the walking would just be like the puppets shifting back and forth from like a mid range shot because they couldn't show the feet, or if they did show the Gelfling's feet, it was clearly like a little kid shot at a distance wearing a costume, which is fine to me because at least that's when you knew something was gonna. If that was the shot, you at least knew something was gonna happen. It was a little more rapid than when it was just the puppet.
Yeah. I mean, you do find out in the middle of the movie that, like, the little oracle, you know, person or whatever, like, you know, basically says it's going to be the end of the world, like, is going to happen. There's all these, like, prophecies and all these other things, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is the end of the world. But I don't know about you, but I watched this as a kid, remember watching it as a kid, and I remember completely freaked out by when they had the little creature or whatever, and the Skeksis took this little creature and they showed him like the Dark Crystal so they could take his essence out. And this like light shines in his eyes and then like all of his skin like collapses. It's like some scary stuff.
The part that freaked me out as a kid was when the Skeksis have their duel and one of them loses and gets thrown out, and the rest of them descend on the loser and like strip his clothes off.
Yeah,
they're so like gnarly looking. They're like they're like big buzzard creatures, and they're very detailed and they're honestly everything in here is impressively made, they're exquisite pieces of art.
Yeah.
But they are not pleasant to look at.
No. The scenes, the lighting, you know, just the detail of the sets, and of the puppets is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
You know, some of those creatures, I remember, like, the bug creatures, you know, reminded me of, you know, some of the big bug creatures from the Fifth Element, you know, and stuff like yeah. that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine they kind of inspired those designs from the Fifth Element.
Yeah.
But my point is, like, all this stuff is exquisitely made and an artistic marvel, but it's not really pleasant to look at. Again, I kept using the phrase nightmarish or very nightmare-like. And really, a lot of this movie, as a kid, will freak you out because these things are, like, everything in the film, except for the little elf guys, is kind of terrifying to look at.
Well, it's because it's a lot of detail, but it's not a lot of detail that you want to see, per se, right?
Yeah.
It's like a lot of destruction or gnarly stuff, you know what I mean? Like, when you're watching Ren and Stimpy, and then there's a close-up of somebody's, like, eyeballs or something like that, you're like...
Yeah, or, like, their nostrils, and you see, like their pores.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine if for those of you who haven't seen it, imagine it's like if every shot in the film was, like, a close-up of your great-great-grandmother's face. that's what it's like watching The Dark Crystal. And I know it's mean, and I know I'm probably going to get hate mail, but... Sometimes this movie is hard to look at despite its obvious artistry.
Mm-hmm.
And you couple that with the fact that it's just so slow.
There's so many
scenes of, like, characters just walking slowly or talking slowly. Ugh. And it drags on so much. And it's like, I appreciate this film much more than I like it.
Uh-huh.
Like, I can't dismiss it completely because, like, again, it's so... The craft of it is so exquisite. I mean, mm-hmm. clearly... There's so much talent that went into making this movie exist.
Yeah.
Because there's not a single live-action person in the entire thing, except for stunt doubles, basically.
No.
But there's no like, you don't see any actors' faces. It's 90% puppets, or maybe probably 95% puppetry. And it's all phenomenal, but it's hard to look at, to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, so slow.
It is very slow. There's not a lot of... stuff to keep you interested or to keep you hanging on or to keep, you know what I'm saying? So it's almost like he starts off on this journey to find this one Ogra, I think is her name, Ogra. And he finds her, like, right away. I'm like, So he's already found her? Like, he just, like, stumbled upon her? Like, yeah. I thought this was going to be, like, half the journey. No, he's already found her. And then it's like, Well, what are we going to do for the next, like, 30 minutes?
And then she just happens to have the piece he needs right there.
Right there. You know? Oh, which one is it? Oh, let me blow on my little flute and it'll light up. Okay.
Yeah.
There it is. There's the crystal. There's the shard.
And I was thinking about this as watching it. I think it's because they realized in the middle of making it how limited the puppetry was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they realized while they were making it, like, oh, yeah, these guys don't actually... We can't do a lot with this now.
No, I thought there was one scene, like near the end, where the Jin is like trying to get away from the bug creatures, and he can just like run right by them and then like go climb up a wall, and they're just like, "What do we do?" You know, because they're so big, and they're so like, you know, kind of ogres. That, you know, they're not very nimble at all, and all these suits probably had to weigh a ton. You know, for them to like walk around and do all these things, but yeah, they looked uncomfortable, and it's just like, how do they even like get around? And it's just like, you know,
well, and that one scene you mentioned is one of the few semi-exciting scenes in the entire movie.
Yeah, and they're like, and oh wow, there's some actual action. Hold on,
and literally, it's 70 minutes into a 90-minute movie.
Yeah,
and I don't want to be a hater. I mean, but it's. We try not to be too negative on this show, but I've never quite understood the cult that's kind of sprung up around these films.
I mean, I just think it's because it's, I mean, I can kind of get it because it's kind of the capturing of, you know, this world or this other world, kind of like the same way as, you know, Lord of the Rings, you know, the mystics and the sense, and it's pretty easy, you know, concept to understand, right? With the crystal and the two split and, you know, then they become one when the shard like comes together. So it's a pretty easy thing. I just think that it got lost in like keeping us along. Like we talk about the MacGuffin, there was no like really MacGuffin to like keep things going. So it's just like we had a lot of stuff in the beginning. We had this middle part. Like if we had to split it into, you know, Act 1, 2, and 3, Act 1 and 2 was kind of like, okay, we've established the story. Act 2, there was just not a lot of, it was a lot of nothing. And then Act 3, there's just like a lot of confusing action and like not a lot of dialogue before you get to the end. You know, it's just like a bunch of sound effects.
No, I completely agree. And it's hard to stay engaged with it. I mean,
yeah.
Like, I feel so bad ragging on it so hard. But I was literally just kind of counting down the minutes waiting for it to end so I could say that I watched it, you know.
It's only 93 minutes. We talked about how short we like these movies. And you're just like, yeah, I kept doing the same thing. Like, how much more have I got to watch of this? Like, I don't know. Oh, I mean, I'm glad I got through it all, but, you know, I don't know if I was as captivated, you know, with the story as an adult as I would have been, like, as a kid, you know, being as scared as I was, you know, watching it then and watching this, like, thing get its essence taken away from it. Like, that was scary as hell.
I mean, there's still some great, like creepy imagery. I mean, the movie's... That's really the best part about it is there's tons of like wild, creepy imagery, but to me, it just doesn't hang together as a narrative whatsoever.
No,
like it's just so glacially paced.
Yeah,
and like they get
they get caught up in the scene with where they're all eating grotesquely. You know, all the Skeksis are eating grotesquely, and there's like things crawling on the table and whatnot. Like, do we really need to have this scene? I don't know.
No, I completely agree. Like, I feel that way about so much of it. It's like, do we need the scenes of them, you know, just like being weird? And I'm trying to think of a good way to explain it. But I mean, so many of the characters are just doing weird things for seemingly no rhyme or reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like the parts where it really comes alive are in the few little action scenes at the end, and then there's the party. That Jin goes to, hosted by the little gnome characters. You see them like playing like instruments and stuff.
Yeah.
That stuff is fun. Because for that's the one moment where the movie actually becomes kind of adorable.
Yeah.
And that works for me, but that's really about the only part of it that works for me.
Yeah. I agree. It was directed by Jim Henson and Frank Oz. Both directed this movie. They're kind of co-directors. It's kind of both their vision on it. Frank Oz does a lot of voices, does the voice of Yoda, does the voice of, used to do the voice of Yoda and of Kermit the Frog and a host of other characters, but another Muppet characters. But I don't know. I guess it's time to, do we need to do the saver or
oh well
moment or rewind?
Well, I mean... I do think we need to talk about if we were going to rewind and enjoy it, what was some part of this movie that you do like? To stick with the format, there's actually something in this movie that you do like. We try to be positive here, so what's a moment that you think actually works in the film?
That's a hard one. Because it's just like so many things like fall apart in the movie, but it's just like, it's just so odd or whatever. I mean, I wish there were more scenes where, I mean, I do love that opening scene where Jan is like with the mystics. I don't think we get like enough of that, you know, cause he's very early on. He's just like kind of on his own. We don't really get to see him hang out with the mystics. I wish there was more of that.
Yeah, I think that we're both in agreement that I wish there was more sweetness in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so much gnarliness that it kind of gets numbing after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like I said it just a moment ago, but I really like the little like gnome party that where they're like playing instruments and Jin's hanging out with the female Gelfling he meets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that to me feels very very Fraggle Rockish,
right?
And very much like the Muppet Show. And I really responded to that.
Kira,
it was kind of,
Kira is her name.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
Because I completely blanked on that.
Yeah, like when he meets her and he like falls in the mud and you know, I mean that's like a real sweet scene, you know.
Yeah, like those things I liked, and it's not that I dislike the ugliness in it. It's just that there's so much of that. Mm-hmm. Like it's really weighted more towards that than anything else, and that gets to be hard to watch after a while, especially because it's so leisurely paced.
Yeah,
so you're just lingering on these hideous creatures that, while again beautifully designed, are hard to look at. But the movie is forcing you to linger on these things that are actually hard to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. Not enough balance, I don't think. So yeah. And then the moment that I would fast forward is just like I said, gets his essence taken away from it. Don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, like I said,
that's like scene super scary for a kid.
Yeah, like I said, the scene where all the buzzard creatures descend on their own when he fails the challenge and they strip of his clothes, them kind of like just descending on him horrified me as a kid. Like I remember being just utterly freaked out by that.
Wow.
And even watching now, it still made me a little anxious because I could remember being a little kid watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a little bit of an emotional flashback watching it.
Oh, wow.
Man. Yeah.
Just like remembering. Just like I had emotional flashbacks when his essence gets taken away. Yeah, no, I get it.
Exactly, yeah. And so in that respect, that stuff is effective, and that's why I can't completely dismiss the movie. But I just don't want to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's my first time watching it probably in 20 years, and I think I'm good for the rest of my life.
Yeah. And and it's not a movie that I want to bring to my kids and say, hey, kids, watch this movie. They're going to be freaked out. They're going to be, what's this?
Yeah.
Come on, man. They're used to watching, you know, Pixar movies where things sort of work out. Maybe not work out like the way that, you know, Cinderella worked out, but, you know, they work out like in real life work out. But anyway.
Yeah, but there are other movies you can show them that will have those qualities that aren't, you know, as kind of gnarly. Like there's, you know, The Princess Bride for one.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we'll get into that stuff later on. We get more into recommendations.
No, I mean we watch like, you know, E.T. and we've watched like the Goonies and, you know, fun family movies. Okay. So let's move on to Labyrinth. And now I will say this was on like when I watched it, you know, downstairs. I didn't see this movie as a kid. Because it was a little bit later. This was like 86 when this came out. So this, I would have been, you know, more or less in like middle school about when this came out. So this would have been like not as cool. Like I was, you know, watching Indiana Jones and like Back to the Future when this came out. So puppets, I don't know if I want to watch a puppet movie that's just, you know, for kids.
Well, I was a little bit younger than you.
Well, I know, but I think a lot of girls like that were my age, they liked it because, I mean, the main character is a girl. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, you like it because.
No, I was going to say that I actually had the same reaction you did. The only reason I saw it as a kid was because my sister liked it a lot.
Ah.
So I saw it more than once growing up because my sister enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like, I don't care about this. I'd rather be watching Indiana Jones or Back to the Future.
Right.
But now I definitely appreciate it much more now.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Labyrinth was done like later. So Dark Crystal was 82. Labyrinth was done in 1986. And oddly enough, the screenplay was written by Terry Jones from Monty Python. Oddly enough.
You can kind of see that some of the Terry Jones qualities to it. I mean, it's not overt, but there's definitely like hints of that.
Mm. So let me just tell you a little bit about it. The synopses. Teenager Sarah is forced by her father and her stepmother to babysit her baby brother, Toby, while they are outside home. So they don't really say where they go. They just like leave, right? Toby does not stop crying, and Sarah wishes that her stepbrother be taken by the Goblin King, Jareth. Outside of the blue, Toby stops crying. And when Sarah looks for him in the cradle, she learns that her wish was granted, and the Goblin King, Jareth, has taken him to the castle Goblin City in the middle of a labyrinth. Sarah repents and asks Jareth to give Toby back, but the Goblin King tells her she has to rescue her brother before midnight. Because that's when her parents are going to return, right? So soon, yeah. Sarah teams up with some allies. Will they rescue Toby in time? And that was written by Claudio Carvalho, they're from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, but they wrote the on IMDb. So it's just like an odd start of a movie, you know? Brother, yeah, like it's taken away, and then all of a sudden she's in like this mystic land, like she's in her bedroom, and then she's in a mystic world.
It's very Wizard of Oz or Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, very much so. I would say that's the first thing I said was like Alice in Wonderland. My wife said Wizard of Oz. I was like, yeah, well, that's true.
Her definitely gathering together like the crew of people and going on this kind of journey together, that was very Wizard of Oz. It's, we should say that the lead is played by Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly, yeah.
Yeah, from, you know, The Rocketeer and Dark Water and the new TV series Snowpiercer that's currently out now.
She's been also in a lot of things. The Beautiful Mind.
Oh, yeah, A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, Mind, not The Beautiful Mind. But, yeah, that was this is when she was really young, right? She's supposed to be 16. I think it was her
first role.
Yes.
Yeah, and she looks about 16, yeah.
Yeah. And the baby is named Toby Williams. The actor, right? The baby actor. His name is Toby Williams. And I think his name was supposed to be something else, but they had to change it to Toby because he wouldn't respond to any other like name. So they changed his character name as well.
We also got to mention that, of course, Jareth the Goblin King is played by the immortal David Bowie.
Bowie. Who did some magical things with those crystal balls, let me tell you.
Yeah, he was very dexterous. And he's really a lot of the reason why I think this movie has endured. I mean, the puppetry in it is great.
Yeah.
Jennifer Connelly is adorable. But really, I think David Bowie's so magnetic that I think he's really why this movie has endured the way it has.
Yeah.
And the movie's kind of a musical. It's got five original Bowie tracks in it.
Yep.
And, you know, so it has moments where it kind of breaks into like a musical vibe, you know.
Yeah.
It's got that song "Dance Magic Dance," you know.
Yeah.
And that's when you talk to people about Labyrinth, they typically mention, you know, Bowie first and foremost.
Yeah, Bowie is kind of the main character in this. I mean, Jennifer Connelly plays the main character, but David Bowie like is the main character, right? Like he's the guy that you know. You think of Labyrinth, you think of like David Bowie.
As I was gonna say, and the story is very kind of vague. Like I'm sure they explain why he wants to keep Toby, but within 20 minutes of the movie, I could not remember. After the first 20 minutes, I literally could not remember why he wanted the baby.
I was
actively watching it.
No, that was one of my criticisms that I was gonna bring up. But before we go there, I just wanted to mention. There was a famed film critic, Richard Corliss, that basically said the film appeared to be influenced by The Wizard of Oz and the works of Maurice Sendak. Oh, everybody should know Maurice Sendak wrote Where the Wild Things Are. And even there's a Where the Wild Things Are book that is in Sarah's room. Toby Froude – or wait, no, hold on. Where am I going? Critic wrote, Labyrinth uses a modern Dorothy Gale out of drab Kansas of real life into a land where the wild things are. So he's kind of mentioned it like together. I think there's a little bit of like Dungeons and Dragons or like kind of like choose your own adventure kind of thing because you're like lost in the labyrinth, but you're also like there's this really. To me, the element that I kind of get is, you know, is where Alice in Wonderland came up is just like, all of a sudden, like Alice in Wonderland, like the scene changes like constantly, right? And there's these new characters. Yes. And that's what you get here. Like every like little thing that she goes in, there's like a new challenge. There's like a new, you know, the scene resets and you're doing something else and you meet these other weird characters.
Yeah, and Dark Crystal has a bit of that too, but you're right. It's very segmented. And it does get a very kind of Alice in Wonderland vibe. One thing that this movie does better than The Dark Crystal is that they kind of learned from I think they learned from their mistakes a little bit. This movie definitely moves better. Like the pacing is better because stuff is when scenes change, things happen more rapidly, so you're not kind of dwelling on scenes as long. And the designs, while still weird and unusual, aren't nearly as grotesque.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're still kind of weird, but they're more like they're a little closer to Muppets.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of more like realistic looking Muppets.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's true.
Like they're overly detailed Muppets. That's the word. The way I'm thinking about trying to express it. They're like overly detailed Muppets.
Well, I mean, even Bowie, there's a little more playfulness to his character, right? Like it's more whimsical, and there's these more musical elements and that sort of thing, and it's a little more lighthearted for sure, because there's like kind of a playfulness to it. It's kind of like a loss of innocence kind of thing, because, you know, she's going through these people that are tricking her, the trickery and all that kind of stuff, you know, between like the door knockers that are talking and, you know, where she has to choose or choose who's lying or like whatever, or even the little other character that he's with, that she's running, you know, that's his friend, like he's, you know, double crossing her and stuff like that. And so, but to me, it's just like, it's disjointed. And I agree with you. There's no, you get into the movie, you're like 30 minutes of the movie. Like, why are we doing all this again? Like, there's no like pull back to anchor you back into the story. You kind of anchor back to, you know, David Bowie. Like you see, you know, his character appear every now and again, kind of anchoring you back to him, but like to the anchor back to her family and to her brother Toby. Like you kind of get lost in that.
Yeah, and it's just stuff happens. It's got that to me is a very fairy tale kind of thing. Like it has no grounding, and it would fall apart really if the designs weren't so interesting. There wasn't always stuff happening, and again because Bowie is just so charismatic, and like every time you start to get a little bored, like a song happens or a cool monster shows up or you know something you know or an interesting little bit of or like an interesting little puzzle will appear. The movie, and that keeps the movie going and holds your attention. Where The Dark Crystal kind of flounders, I think this sort of kind of lurches along at a better pace. I mean, it's still slow. It's still got a lurchy quality to it. Mm-hmm. But at least there's things that will kind of snap you out of kind of... The minute you get bored, something interesting happens.
Yeah.
That's the way I look at Labyrinth. The minute I'm getting a little... Like I'm where I want to check the time on the player, something will happen. Like Bowie will sing or there'll be a neat bit of puppetry...
Yeah, where like the heads are like coming off of them while they're dancing and stuff. You know, like who never seen that before, right?
Yeah, and it's got more of a whimsical quality to it than Dark Crystal. So to me, that makes it work better. So while I'm kind of ambivalent towards Dark Crystal, I can say I like Labyrinth. I'm not a huge fan of it, but I do like it.
Yeah, Hoggle is the name of the character. He kind of plays this, like, you know, kind of Irish,
He's sort of like a gnomish leprechaun kind of character.
Yeah.
He's definitely, he would fit right into the Dark Crystal as he's got kind of that gnarly character design about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just thought it was just a weird, you know, journey. But yeah, there's always like things happening. I mean, my kids like kind of came in the middle of it. And like I said, I watched it and my kids didn't watch it. Like I didn't like go, hey, watch this movie guys. So we're going to watch this movie. They just kind of came in from playing outside and doing whatever. And you know, they were enamored by, you know, the puppeteering and the singing and the dancing and the cajoling or whatever. And also, like, the they would kind of get bored at some of the scenes where they didn't really know what was going on, or the trickery that was happening, because they didn't, like, know the full story. But they still, yeah, like, were interested. They're like, oh, what's this? And it kind of held their attention more.
Well, and there's stuff that's just straight up adorable. Like, you got the little knight who rides the dog, and sometimes the dog's a real dog, and sometimes it's a puppet.
Yeah.
And it's all just really cute.
Yeah.
That sounds so dismissive to say Labyrinth is better because it's cuter, but that's kind of the truth. It's better because it's more fun to look at.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy spending time with those characters more than I did the characters in Dark Crystal.
Right. And then you get to the end, and it's like, all of a sudden, you're in an M.C. Escher painting, right? trying to get the baby or whatever.
And I think that stuff's pretty cool, where David's kind of, you know, changing dimensions. He's like, flipping his perspective. And that's got some really neat, like, old-school special effects to it.
Yeah.
So,
perspective type of stuff, yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I'm not a huge fan of Labyrinth, but I definitely enjoyed it. And I don't regret watching it. It wasn't as much of a chore as I felt the Dark Crystal was. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm sorry. I know I'm going to get hate mail for saying that about the Dark Crystal, but I really felt like it was a chore to get through.
Oh, okay. I mean, I get it. I totally understand it. I mean, that makes total sense. Seeing both of them like back to back like that. I totally get it. And, what is one, I will say this though, before we move on to like our favorite bits or bits we wanted to fast forward through. It is weird, and I've always found it weird, that, you know, this older man, like David Bowie, is saying to the 16-year-old Jennifer Connelly, like, surrender to me. It's always that was always a little,
it is
creepy.
It is weird.
Yeah.
But I think that's why a lot of young girls liked it. I think a lot of girls were very enamored with Bowie at that. I mean, at least that's when I've talked to women in my own life who love Labyrinth. The first thing they always say is, "Oh my God, David Bowie!" You know.
Wow.
And they talk about wanting to be like Jennifer Connelly in that ballroom scene. You know.
Oh,
so there's definitely like some weird like undertones to it that I think the movie does is strange, mm-hmm. but I think the audience reception to it was there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't get it. So, I mean, but I think that there are definitely girls who kind of wish they were Jennifer Connelly in that film. At least that's what I've seen from talking to my friends about it over the years.
Well, what scene would you rewind and you know, want to savor some more?
Basically, I love the Dance Magic Dance musical scene. Like, we've talked about my secret love of musicals before on this show.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the Dance Magic Dance scene. I really do. Okay. Like, I'll pull it up on YouTube sometimes and just enjoy that song.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It really is. I mean, and my kids were dancing, too. They were, you know, dancing during that and also at the end of the movie, for sure. Yeah. My favorite was, just a weird scene. And it wasn't like, you know, this character just like popped up and like she didn't get enough like screen time. And it's the little worm yeah. character. I thought she was fantastic.
The very British worm.
Yeah, British worm. I wanted to like meet her whole family and like, you know, get to know that character. I mean, she's like wearing this like, you know, kind of like weird looking thing. And it was just, she was awesome. And even when I talked to, we have a mutual friend and she loves this movie. And that's the first thing she said. She's like, I love the worm. I was like, I do too. So yeah, I mean, it's, I wish there was more, like I said, you could do a whole, you know, series on, you know, with her, you know, she could carry a whole, you know, TV show.
Like there's lots of little interesting characters in Labyrinth. Like, I mean, again, you've got Lugo, like this big like Chewbacca like character.
Yeah, it's
kind of like this.
Yeah, it's Ludo.
Ludo, yeah. Thank you.
It's kind of hard to hear what she's saying, and even my wife was like saying it was Ludo, Luto, and I was like, no, it's Ludo. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I knew that. It's just like I said, we record these late and after a full day at our regular jobs, and sometimes we get a little fuzzy. So thank you for bearing with us. But yeah, he's adorable. I mean, again, yeah. the little puppy dog Knight with his puppy dog Steed. I love that character to death. Like, that to me is one of the best characters in the entire film. Like, I could watch like a series of shorts just about him trying to fight people.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff amused me a lot. And
the guards were funny. The door knockers were, you know, a nice little bit of comic relief. I mean, it was just
Yeah, there's more to enjoy, and I mean legitimately enjoy about Labyrinth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as scenes I would skip over, I'm not a big fan of the scene with the guy with the bird hat,
mm-hmm.
where there's lots of little scenes like that in Labyrinth,
mm-hmm.
but it's just where she gets like a piece of information and then she moves on to the next piece of information,
uh-huh.
and I know you need those to kind of carry her through the story,
uh-huh.
but they get repetitive.
Right.
So any scene like that, I kind of want to skip over. Mm. But you would need them in the film. I just don't particularly like those scenes.
I see. Scenes I would fast forward through. I don't know. There's not much.
Well, I was thinking about it. It's really kind of hard because you know, when we talk about these sometimes. Sometimes as we discuss them, I realize, wow, I like this less than I thought, or wow, I like this more than I thought. And this one, I'm realizing. I liked Labyrinth way more than I thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm actually talking about it out loud.
Yeah, it's not anything I want to take out or that I'm like, I don't like that scene. I just wish they would have put in more like sort of anchors or something else, like more clocks where you know what time it is or, you know what's going on.
To give
on
it
or,
some sense of urgency.
Yeah, to kind of keep it moving a little bit. Otherwise, it is kind of like, you know, we're just going to the next, like almost like a, like you're playing a video game and you're just getting to the next world and then like the next world and the next world. And you don't know like where you are or where we're at in the story or like whatever. So, I don't know, maybe it was like that. Maybe they designed it like that. So just like you feel like you get lost in a labyrinth, you kind of get lost in the movie. Like, where are we at? But I don't think you need to do that to get that point across, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I can definitely see why that would be a stylistic choice they made.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like you. I felt a little disconnected from it because of that.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go through the notes. Real quickly, The Dark Crystal, 1982. Jim Henson's plan with this movie was to get back to the darkness of the original Brothers Grimm fairy tales. He felt that children liked the idea of being scared, and this was his healthy emotion for them, which led to deal with. So, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was a popularity like Poltergeist or something like that that like drew him to like maybe do a darker picture or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I get where he's coming from, and I definitely admire the intent. But all I can think about is the scenes that really bothered me as a kid. Still kind of made my skin crawl as a full-grown man decades later. And I wonder if he maybe took it a little too far in places. I don't know.
Co-directors Jim Henson and Frank Oz were in charge of every aspect of the movie, but according to Henson, his strengths lay in composing camera shots and movement, while Oz was more in tune with character development and the dynamics of a scene. So.
Well, that definitely makes sense because, you know, Oz went on to direct a lot of live-action stuff, too.
Yeah. Early drafts of the script featured Jin and Kira traveling through the underworld where they encouraged a race of underground mining creatures. The concept was later integrated into Fraggle Rock.
Aw, the Dozers.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love the Dozers?
Yeah. Jim Henson personally trimmed 20 minutes from this movie after a disastrous preview in San Francisco. He ordered many of the character voices to be redubbed to eliminate some of the invented character languages, making this movie more accessible and the plot easier to follow.
Like, I can't imagine a longer version of this that was harder to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a longer version of this movie that was more obtuse?
No. I'm shaking my head. No.
Yeah, it's as I was watching it, I'm like, man, this movie is long, and man, it's kind of hard to get into this world. I can't imagine that it was even more impregnable before.
And it's like,
this is the improved version of it.
Oh, let's cut back to the scene of, let's see where the, you know, where the mystics are now.
Yeah. They're just kind of shifting. I think they're moving.
I think they're moving. All right. At the same time it was made, it was hailed as the only live action movie in which a human character makes no appearance. With the exception of some wide shots of the Gelflings, it would have been the first live action movie where no human actors appeared.
Like I said, it's a technical marvel. It's just like as a narrative feature, to me, it just doesn't work. But technically, it's amazing.
Well, the movie slightly made over $40 million from its like $15 million budget.
That's so surprising to me.
Yeah, many parents felt that the movie was too scary for children, which I kind of agree. Even though it was rated PG, I mean, that's why they rated PG, right? Like, and really, if this movie came out now, I don't know if it would still be rated PG. They might, you know, find some things to make it PG-13 or something. I mean,
PG-13.
Well, yeah, because I remember like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was like PG-13. People were like, what?
In 1982, the PG-13 rating didn't exist yet.
True, so. Very true. But it was the 16th highest grossing movie in North America in 1982.
That's kind of mind-blowing to me. I had no idea it was a hit. I kind of thought it was like an underappreciated cult classic.
I mean, Rotten Tomatoes critic score is 79%, audience score 81%.
That makes sense. I'm not surprised.
And there is a TV series on Netflix called The Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance and Returns to the World of I can't pronounce it.
We need a pronunciation guide for this movie. We really do.
With an all new adventure, it's the same world, right? With a new adventure when three Gelfling discover a secret behind the Skeksis' power.
So yeah. And sadly, I never watched it, but I know it got canceled because it was just so expensive to make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, apparently it cost a fortune.
Well, yeah, because it wasn't animated. I mean, they did the full puppeteering and everything.
And that's just gotten more and more expensive as the years go on, you know?
Yeah. So moving on to Labyrinth. The movie was loosely based on Outside Over There, a children's book written and illustrated by Mari Sandak in 1981.
Huh, interesting.
So Jim Henson and Brian Froud, the conceptual designer, he was also the conceptual designer to Dark Crystal as well, wanted to do a lighter weight picture with more of a sense of comedy since Dark Crystal got kind of heavy, heavier than we intended, he said. Now I wanted to do a film with the characters having more personality and interacting more.
So that kind of confirms my theory that they kind of learned lessons from the Dark Crystal and applied them to Labyrinth. Yeah. It could really shows.
Yeah. Helena Bonham Carter, Jane Krakowski, Yasmin Bleeth, Sarah Jessica Parker, Mary Stuart Masterson, Laura Dern, Maddie Corman, Carrie Green, Lily Taylor, Laura San Giacomo, Ali Sheedy, Mia Sara, and Marissa Tomei all auditioned for the role of Sarah Williams.
Huh. That's quite a list of people.
A long list.
And some really recognizable names there.
All right. So you want to know who almost got, what an alternate universe it would be if any of these other guys would have been Goblin King Jareth, Michael Jackson, Prince, and Mick Jagger were all considered.
Mick Jagger, I think, would have been really creepy. Same thing with Michael Jackson, you know. But Prince, I could see Prince doing it because he's got that kind of androgynous quality
and mystical quality.
Like he's otherworldly.
Yes,
like Bowie's kind of got the otherworldly quality. And so does Prince. The only thing that makes Bowie a better fit is that Bowie is so tall
mm-hmm.
that he's imposing. Like, he's still kind of mystical and otherworldly, but he's also a little bit intimidating because he looms so large.
Yeah, but you can do that with camera tricks, man. They can make Tom Cruise look menacing.
That's true, but I think Prince would have been interesting. No. I really do. I also really like Prince. So.
All right. Let's see. David Bowie, who had just reached his peak of mainstream popularity with the Last Dance album, would be best suited. Bowie wanted to make a children's movie. He liked the concept, and he found the script funnier and more amusing than any other contemporary special effects movies. So that's why he signed on to do it. The various things, though, demystify you or upset you. But the various things that Jareth does with crystal balls, like rolling around his arms and his hands and so forth, are not camera tricks or any other kind of special effects, and it's not Bowie. They're actually done by choreographer Michael Morshin, who is an accomplished juggler. Morshin was actually crouched behind Bowie with his arms replacing Bowie's, kind of like puppeteering.
It's that old gag where you put your hands behind your back and your friend puts his arms underneath your
right.
armpits.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
Kind of like puppeteering. You have a puppet, you know, kind of, you know.
Yeah, that actually made that's really cool. Yeah.
So, but that's how he looks like he's doing it, because I'm sitting there going, oh my God, like, look how talented Bowie is. He can just do all this like crazy stuff. Because he's Bowie.
Yeah. Like, we don't even question it. No. We're like, of course David Bowie can juggle crystal balls. He's David Bowie.
Okay. This also may kind of upset you too, but the owl in the title sequence, the owl in the title sequence is computer generated. It was the first attempt at photorealistic CGI animal character in a feature film.
Like, you can tell, it looks sort of real, but not really. I thought it was stop motion, but it makes sense that it would be an early, like, CGI creation.
I think that when it's sitting there, like, later in the film, it's like, that's a real owl, but when it's, like, flying around or whatever, that's when you notice it. It's kind of looks...
It doesn't when look it gets kind of a sheen to it,
right. So the dance magic scene consisted over 48 Muppets, 52 puppeteers, and 8 people in goblin costumes. Just
wow.
to pull that
yeah,
off.
I mean, like, it's a super intricate scene, and it's, like I said, to me, it's the highlight of the film, for sure.
This is kind of a weird story, but I thought I would include it because I thought it was so great. It has nothing to do, hardly anything to do with the movie or movie production, but a Hoggle puppet, excuse me, a Hoggle puppet got lost on an airplane and remained undiscovered until it turned up at the Unclaimed Baggage Center store in Scottsboro, Alabama. When a worker opened the crate, he got a scare by the sight of the puppet, and it is now on display in their museum.
Huh. Mm. Yeah, I imagine that must have been terrifying. I used to stumble across that.
Yeah. You know? They have all kinds of stuff like that, like the odd stuff that they don't want to sell, that they want to, you know, show. And that's not just like normal everyday items. And you can go there and you can shop. I think you can even shop online. There's a website that you can go to of just things that got left and never got picked up. And, you know, you now know where your baggage goes, right? That never gets claimed. So where was I at? I lost my place. Producer George Lucas did not do any interviews during the release of this movie as to not steal Jim Henson's thunder, who was at the time one of his best friends until his death. So Lucas, like, wasn't involved with the film, just Lucas Arts was was listed as one of the producers. It was a co-producer between the Henson Production Company and Lucas Arts. So...
Yeah, which I didn't even notice that in the credits. So that's pretty interesting.
I mean, you have to think. I mean, Frank Oz was, I mean, of course. I mean, he did the movie. He did, you know, all the boys.
He's Yoda. Of course. Yeah.
There is a Goblin Companion book that gives a description of every goblin in Labyrinth that was written by Brian Froud and Terry Jones.
I bet you that's pretty interesting, you know, because those kind of details are always fun.
Yeah, right? That's weird. Yeah. Like, every goblin, like, has a weird story. Oh, and speaking of Lucas, I almost forgot this. In 1986, 2 video games based on this movie were released, one in Japan and one in the U.S. and other markets, Labyrinth the Computer Game for Apple II and Commodore 64 was released in the West, and it was the first graphic adventure game developed by Lucasfilm Games, a company that became LucasArts in the 1990s.
Huh.
So that's a lot of first animated, you know, thing, which I guess came from CGI, which also probably came from Lucas Production, right? And then also, like, the first computer game produced by LucasArts, right? It's pretty significant.
Well, they were always trolls. They were always trailblazers, you know?
And then the budget was $25 million, which is, I mean, it's the almost the exact same for The Dark Crystal. But the box office for Labyrinth was 12.9.
See, I guess that's why I thought Dark. I guess I got the success of Dark Crystal and Labyrinth mixed up. Mm-hmm. Like, because I knew one of them wasn't very successful. Mm. And I imagine the darkness of The Dark Crystal probably hurt Labyrinth. Mm. You know?
Yeah. Roger Ebert gave the movie 2 stars. He says, the movie is an impressive production that is often good to look at. Some real thought went into it, and the David Bowie soundtrack is fine, yet there's something missing. It never really comes alive.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I mean, it definitely has faults.
Yeah, my wife called it like disjointed, kind of, because it does kind of like rambly go from one thing to the next to the next.
Oh, it's definitely disjointed for sure.
Yeah. Roger Ebert also called it too long, and there's no structure to the order of the adventures.
That's very true. That's a very good way of saying it.
Yeah. Yeah, so Rotten Tomatoes score 72% critics, 86% audience.
It's a pretty well-regarded movie amongst people our age, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, just to give a you know, what the other movie was 79 and 81, right, for The Dark Crystal, and this is 72 and 86.
So the critics liked it less, but the people liked it more. Which kind of jives with what we've said about it. It makes sense.
Yeah. Well, didn't like it as much. I mean, if The Dark Crystal is at 81%, but Labyrinth is at 86% audience-wise. Yeah.
Well, because it's not as artistically challenging as The Dark Crystal, but it is more audience-pleasing. So I totally get why Labyrinth would have a score like that in relation to The Dark Crystal.
Yes.
So we're at that point in the show where we have to ask the age-old question. If you were to rent this Jim Henson fantasy double feature, would you keep him an extra day, or would you get him back on time to avoid those late fees?
I mean, the Dark Crystal definitely had some beautiful shot scenes, but it just reminded me of like a movie like Dune, where it was just like, oh, this is great, this is cool, but like all this stuff's going on. There's not a lot of action, but there's stuff like, okay, do we really need to show this? So, like, Dune, if you've seen Dune, you like Dune, you probably like The Dark Crystal. But if you just, like, not a whole lot of stuff, you know, happening, but these beautiful scenes. So, yeah, I would get back The Dark Crystal. But I would probably keep Labyrinth.
You know, I mean, I liked Labyrinth, but not enough to pay a late fees for it. So, I would get them back both on early to avoid those late fees. I watched them. I don't regret watching them. Yeah. I think I'm good on both of them for a while.
Yeah, like
I think if I need that.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I need that Henson fix, I'm gonna watch, you know, The Muppets Show on Disney Plus.
There you go. Yeah, I can see that. And I guess I didn't get really burnt out like with The Labyrinth as a kid. Still really interesting to me. So, but yeah, that about does it. Movies that we would recommend to go along with these movies, I would say the closest movie that I can think, and I kept like thinking about it when I watched like really kind of both of these, is a movie I loved as a kid that is also a kind of a popular movie now, but wasn't really, is The Neverending Story.
Yeah, I think that's probably the same. If you talk about those movies as like a series, that's the superior one of the three.
Yeah.
I agree.
There's live action, but there's enough like puppeteering to keep you in. There's a lot more anchor into the main story. There's like an overarching, like kind of bigger story. There's still like enough like segments that are like different enough that are like, you know, bring you into this alternate world. I think it's a beautifully masterful, like weaved story between like a real life and this fantasy world.
Yeah, and it's got a little bit of that darkness, but it's not oppressive. You know, it has lightness in it too. So I think that's a good call, and I think it would work very well with either of these movies. For me, I'm going to say the movie I mentioned earlier, which is The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
It's another kind of fairy tale come to life. It's got a little bit of that darkness, but it's got a lot of adventure and a lot of heart. And even though there's no real puppetry in it, it still has a very similar vibe of being a long time ago in a different world. And just a very different take on the idea of fantasy tropes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would go well with either film.
Yeah, and I would much more comfortable with sitting down with my kids and watching that and realize that they're not going to get scarred by either of them.
Exactly. Even though, again, there is some darkness in it, there is some violence, there is some heavy stuff, it's still light enough where you know, it doesn't feel like it's going to be damaging or oppressive.
Inconceivable.
That word, I think, yeah. Anyway, we're going to start quoting the movie because we're out of time, Ryan. We're out of time for this week.
I know, but I never want it to end, my friend. It's always a great pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. Even when the movies aren't great, the conversation is always stellar. So, you know, until next time, I'm Matthew Estrie.
I'm Ryan Acree.
Go watch some movies, guys, and dance, magic, dance.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, come hang out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.
in 9 hours and 23 minutes. You'll be mine.
I saw my baby trying hard as babe could try. What could I do? My baby's fun had gone and left my baby blue. Nobody knew. What kind of magic spells to use?
Slime and snakes.
Happy dancing.
Under your light.
Then baby said,
hey.